Part 3. Family. Mother. Diane Wuornos. Diane Kathleen Wuornos was born in Detroit, Michigan on August 12, 1939, to Laurie Jacob Wuornos and Eileen Britta Wuornos, who were descendants of Finnish immigrants. She had two younger siblings, Barry and Lorne Wuornos. At the age of 13, Diane met 17-year-old Leo Arthur Pittman, a violent sexual deviant who had a controlling nature, telling Diane that she needed to stay home while he worked as a gardener, created chrome car bumpers, and engaged in criminal activity such as auto theft and thievery. When she became pregnant, the pair eloped on June 3, 1954. He had just turned 18 and she was 14 years old. On March 14, 1955, their son, Keith Edward Pittman, was born. By May, Diane was pregnant again, but 2 months before having their second child, Leo was sent off to serve in the army as punishment for several auto theft crimes that he had been apprehended for. It was either the army or jail time, and he chose the army. Diane filed for divorce, and on February 29, 1956, Eileen Carol Pittman was born in Rochester, Michigan. As a single mother of two babies without any income, Diane decided to dump her kids off at her cousin's house, some reports say a friend's house. By the time Eileen was 4, she and Keith were adopted by their maternal grandparents and were raised as their own without any sign of their biological mother or father. They were too young to know the difference at that point and thought of their grandparents as their mom and dad. Diane had found a new man, David Elvin Tooley, who was originally from Dallas, Texas, and was pregnant by January 1957, before Eileen turned 1. The couple got married, and on September 24, 1957, Kathy Lynn Tooley was born. In 1960, their second child, David Elvin Tooley Jr., was born. Eileen was 7 years old when she found out that her grandparents were not her biological parents, and her older siblings, Barry and Laurie, were in fact her aunt and uncle. Diane had totally and utterly abandoned her children and run off to start a new life for herself away from everything that she had ever known, caring for her two new children the way that a mother is supposed to. Her name became Diane Kathleen Tooley. It's interesting to note that she named her new daughter after her own middle name, which she did not choose to do with Eileen. Nick Broomfield tracked Diane down for an interview on October 6, 2002, 3 days before Eileen was executed. She was 63 years old at the time and wore a face portraying denial, pride, and total disassociation from her daughter, Eileen. Her interview started with her wanting to get something off her chest, which was that Eileen was a frank breech birth, which meant that she was born bottom first. In her mind, this was the reason why Eileen's brain was affected, a great deflection from the neglect that her daughter suffered directly from her. I thought maybe she got some kind of brain damage from that birth, and while she is mentally competent, it may have caused her problems, she said. When Broomfield told her that Eileen had been sleeping in the woods in the middle of winter as a teenager, Diane said, "I know nothing about that. I never heard Barry tell me that." When Broomfield said, "And then she ended up hitchhiking around?" Diane said, "Which she liked," as if Eileen's survival was her own choice and something that she enjoyed. After some silent reflection, Diane asked, "Do you know the exact date of the execution?" And when Broomfield told her that he thought it would be very soon, she said, "Okay, I think I'll rest better," which sums up her sentiment towards the daughter that she so callously discarded as a baby. When Broomfield told Eileen that he had visited her mother, she became instantly enraged, saying, "Let me tell you something about my mother. She plopped me out of her belly, left me with my grandparents, and we never knew her. So tell that damn whore that I couldn't give a fuck if she even had me." When he said that her mother had asked for her forgiveness, she said, "She can go to hell. She doesn't have my forgiveness. I don't know her and don't even want to know her." Her second husband passed away at the age of 68 on February the 4th, 2001, 20 months before her daughter was executed. He was living in San Diego, California at the time, and is listed as her ex-husband, so they likely got divorced. Diane has allegedly passed away, with some sources reporting that she died from liver failure, which her mother had also died from. The location and date of her death are unknown. Rest in peace, Diane Kathleen Tooley, 12th of August, 1939, to unknown. Father, Leo Arthur Pittman. Leo Arthur Pittman was born in Detroit, Michigan, on March 16, 1936, and was the only child of Arthur Stewart Briggs, 1913 to 1981, and Ellen Lorraine Pittman, 1920 to 2008, and were of German descent. His parents got divorced at some point, and his mother married Anthony John Westfall Jr. They had their own daughter, Debbie Hazard, who was Leo's half-sister. When he was 17, he met 14-year-old Diane Kathleen Wernos, and by June of 1954, she was pregnant. The pair eloped on June 3, 1954, and had their first son, Keith Edward Pittman, on March 14, 1955. By May of the same year, she was pregnant again, but Leo would never get to know his daughter, Eileen, who was born on February 29, 1956. He had committed a series of crimes in the area, including auto theft and robbery, and was sentenced to serve time either in jail or in the army. He chose the army and left 2 months before she was born, which resulted in Diane filing for divorce. In his late 20s, Leo was suffering from deteriorating mental health and suffering from schizophrenia. He was admitted to Larned State Hospital in Kansas, a psychiatric institution. In April 1963, he escaped and was later admitted to a mental institution in Michigan. By 1967, he had kidnapped, raped, and sodomized an 8-year-old boy and was apprehended in Kansas, where the Supreme Court sentenced him to life imprisonment. On January 30, 1969, at the age of 32, he was found dead in his cell. He had died from suicide by hanging. He was buried in the United States Penitentiary in Leavenworth County, Kansas. Rest in peace, Leo Arthur Pittman, 16th of March 1936 to the 30th of January 1969. Age 32. Grandmother, Eileen Britta Wernos. Eileen Britta Molainen was born on February 1st, 1917, in Portage, Houghton, Michigan, to Henrik Mattsson Molainen and Valperi Molainen, who were Finnish immigrants. She had 13 siblings and grew up in Houghton, Michigan. She married Laurie Jacob Wernos and had 3 children with him, Diane, Barry, and Laurie. When Diane had 2 children of her own as a teenager and could no longer take care of them after her divorce, Britta and Laurie adopted them as their own on March 18, 1960, where they officially became Wernoses. Eileen, who believed for a long time that her grandmother was her mother, developed a strong bond with her and always spoke fondly of her. She was a strict mom, though, with Eileen saying that if the kids said one swear word, they would have a bar of lava soap put into their mouths as punishment. She described her as enjoying waltz music, gardening, and making her home as beautiful as she could, which she dreamed of having white shutters on the windows and big trees in the backyard, even planting some that Eileen could see photographs of when she was on death row. Eileen ran away from home when she was 13 and 14, saying that Mom cared, but Dad didn't. She did not realize that she would never see Britta again when she ran away again. On July 7, 1971, Britta died in her bedroom from cirrhosis of the liver. According to Eileen's letters to her friend Dawn, she said that her death was assisted by Laurie, her husband, who gave her alcohol at her request to ease the pain. After her death, Lori kicked Eileen and Keith out of the house, telling Eileen that it was the stress that she had caused them that killed her. The trees that she had planted can still be seen at the house today. The new residents have even planted more trees, which Eileen said was like watching her grandmother's vision come to life. When the kids were growing up, Brita told them that she believed that people who died could send signs to their loved ones and told them that when she died, they should put a rose in a vase, and if it lasted longer than usual, it would be her sending them a sign that she was still there with them. Eileen told her friend Dawn that her grandfather and stepsister Lori did this and that the rose lasted for a week and a half, which they saw as their sign. Rest in peace, Eileen Brita Wuornos. 1st of February, 1917 to the 7th of July, 1971. Age, 54. Grandfather, Lori Jacob Wuornos. Lori Jacob Wuornos was born on January 28, 1911 to Jacob August Wuornos and Anna Wuornos, who were Finnish immigrants who had moved to the USA to work on the mines, initially settling in Minnesota and later moving to Michigan. He had two brothers and one sister. He met and married Eileen Britta Molainen and had one son and two daughters with her, Diane, Barry, and Lori. The family initially lived in the Rochester area in 1936, then moved to Akron, Ohio, and later returned to Troy, Michigan, where Lori built the house that the family grew up in with the help of cousins and other family members, adding Finnish touches to it, including a steam room and fireplace. He worked as an engineer for Ford, then Chrysler, and when he was retrenched, he worked for a short time as a janitor at a school. He then got a job as a quality assurance manager at Beaver Precisions in Troy, Michigan, where the family settled. When his daughter Diane got pregnant as a teenager and left home, she returned after getting divorced with two children that she no longer wanted. Lori and Brita decided to adopt them and raise them as their own, even though he demonstrated resentment towards them from the day that they had arrived, likely due to the rage and resentment he felt towards their biological father, Leo Arthur Pittman, who was described as a criminal type by the family. Eileen described Lori as cold as ice towards them, saying that they had to call him Sir and not Dad like his own children were allowed to. He had served as a sergeant in the army during World War II, and while he struggled with alcoholism himself, made sure to run a strict household, especially when it came to Keith and Eileen. "My dad was a stringent, strict bastard, but other than that he was all right," Eileen wrote to her friend Dawn. According to some of Eileen's childhood friends, Lori used to beat them with a razor belt and make them clean it afterward. In court and her letters, Eileen said that while she was beaten a handful of times, these claims were totally exaggerated. There were also reports of him raping Eileen, but she said that he had never sexually assaulted her. "My dad was so straight and clean, he wouldn't even take his shirt off to mow the lawn. He did not believe in cussing, long hair, or mini skirts. I came from a real clean and decent family," she said, while she sat on death row waiting to be executed. She was, however, raped by one of his acquaintances, which is how she became pregnant at the age of 14, the same age that her mother had first become pregnant, which Lori was not happy about. When she ran away from home, he reported her as a runaway so that when she was caught, she would be sent to a juvenile facility, which is exactly what happened. He told the court upon her release that he didn't want her anymore, and in response, she told him that she hated his guts. Even though she had chosen to flee the house on several occasions, it must have stung that both her biological mother and grandfather did not want her and instead totally abandoned and discarded her. Lori was an alcoholic throughout his life who drank copious amounts of wine every day, and naturally the more he drank, the angrier he got with Keith and Eileen. He drank excessively when his wife got sick, unable to cope with the thought of losing her. When she died, staying in the house was just too painful for him, so he eventually placed a bet on a horse at Hazel Park Track Race in Detroit, Michigan, using the house as a bargaining chip, and lost. Lori and Keith went to stay with neighbors, and Eileen was forced to stay in abandoned cars and out in the woods on her own. In 1976, Lori took his own life by carbon monoxide poisoning in Barry's garage, where he was found by Barry on the same day. This means that Eileen lost her biological father and grandfather to suicide. Rest in peace, Lori Jacob Wuornos, 28th of January, 1911, to the 12th of March, 1976. Age 65. Brother, Keith Wuornos. Keith Edward Pittman was born on March 14th, 1955, in Rochester, Michigan, to 15-year-old Diane Kathleen Wuornos Pittman and 18-year-old Leo Arthur Pittman. His sibling, Eileen Carol Pittman, was born 11 months later. Before they were 2 years old, their parents would be divorced, and they would be discarded by their mother and adopted by their maternal grandparents, where they were raised side by side with two older siblings. When Keith was 8 and Eileen was 7, they found out that the parents who had raised them were not their biological parents, but rather their biological grandparents, and that their siblings were their step-siblings and their uncle and aunt. By the time they were 10 years old, Keith and Eileen were having sex with each other, bonded through trauma from the abuse at the hands of their sadistic grandfather. He was never fond of them. A friend who had witnessed them together in a place where the neighborhood kids would hang out called the Pits said that it was nothing more than consensual foreplay, and when Eileen was asked about it, she said that they were too scared to go any further because they were told that brothers and sisters should not have any sexual contact. However, Keith was frequently teased and bullied by other kids for his sexual relationship with his sister. In letters to her friend Dawn, Eileen said that they were always treated like second class in the home and stuck together through it all, saying that she loved Keith to the max. They played with these G.I. Joe toys and cars together, where Eileen, as Keith called her, was more of a tomboy whose company he really enjoyed. When Eileen got pregnant at the age of 15 and was kicked out of the family home, both she and Keith dropped out of school and hit the road to survive, which caused them to separate. Eileen lived in the woods, while Keith accepted the offers from other families in the community to stay with them. When Eileen made her way across America, she initially still saw him when she hitchhiked back and forth between their hometown and other states. But eventually, she made her way to Florida and did not see him anymore. Eileen eventually found out how sick Keith was from esophageal cancer and headed home, bringing home a gift which he could not enjoy, a flute. His neck was so swollen that he could barely move. He had allegedly volunteered for medical studies, which prevented his tumor from being removed. While Dawn said that Eileen only found out how sick Keith had been when she was at his funeral, she implied in her letters that she had visited him in hospital before he died, where he said, "I know how you're getting your money, Eileen. I know you're hustling, and I want you to stop it. I'm leaving you $10,000 in a beneficiary." She said that he had told her that she had been the only person to visit him in the 8 months that he had spent in and out of hospital. He was transferred to Ann Arbor, and on July 17, 1976, he died from esophageal cancer at the age of 21. His funeral was held in Troy, Michigan, where Eileen saw their mutual friend, Dawn, for the first time since she had left for Florida. Their friendship was rekindled and lasted until Eileen was executed. After the funeral, Eileen collected Keith's ashes and drove down to Stainhatchee, Florida, where she scattered them on a rocky wall along the shoreline. She used the $10,000 that Keith had left her to buy a new car, pay off some fines, and drink, which caused her to wreck the car within a few weeks. She kept a few of his personal belongings, including his Bible, and two tickets to a Doobie Brothers concert, which he was not able to attend. Interestingly, Sue Russell mentions in her book that Keith's paternal grandfather, Leo Herbert Pittman, had died of esophageal cancer as well, Perhaps the cause of Keith's young death had a predominantly genetic element. Rest in peace, Keith Edward Wuornos, 14th of March 1955 to the 17th of July 1976, age 21. Uncle Barry Wuornos. Barry Arnold Wuornos was born in 1944 in Michigan to Laurie Jacob Wuornos and Eileen Britta Wuornos. He had two biological siblings, Diane Kathleen Wuornos and Laurie Wuornos, and two step-siblings, Keith and Eileen Wuornos, who were adopted by his parents when he was 12. He attended Troy High School, where he performed well both academically and in sport, appearing in the yearbook as part of the golf team. The significant age gap meant that there was little connection between step-siblings, with Barry demonstrating equal resentment towards them as his father had. Eileen was allegedly sexually assaulted by Barry when she was younger, which added insult to injury when he testified against her in court and told the world that she was raised in a normal, happy home. He had left the home when Eileen was 10 years old to enter the military service and said that he had never seen his father beat or abuse her or Keith, even though his father was a disciplinarian and they had all received a few spankings as kids. "About the time I went into the service, things got kind of tight with Eileen, discipline-wise," he said. Eileen stared at him with her nose crinkled and her lips downturned in disgust as he testified at her trial in court. The one nice thing that he said about her was that she had great artistic talent, which is true, based on the ink drawings that she left with Arlene Prawley and Dawn Botkins. When Barry had returned to Michigan after his military service and heard that Keith was dying from cancer, he had not visited him once in hospital, but eventually stepped in to offer him his home as a place to die more comfortably. Dawn Botkins, Eileen's childhood friend, said that while his intention had been to look after Keith, he was just never home, so she decided to visit him every day to feed him, give him baths, and offer him some company. Barry bought Keith a Corvette, his dream car, right before he died, and felt emotional when he saw how frail and skinny his body had become. In court, at Eileen's trial, prosecutors asked Barry if he had contacted her after she had been apprehended, to which he answered, no. When asked why not, given that she was raised alongside him as his sister, he said, there was no reason to contact her. He said that she had been in trouble before, and he saw it as her being in trouble again, and he didn't want anything to do with it, even though he had jumped on the opportunity to testify against her. Some ancestry sources report Barry Arnold Wuornos as deceased, while some speculate that he is still alive, which would make him 77 years old in 2021. He got married and had a family of his own, disappearing into a life of blissful anonymity as Eileen waited to be executed. Aunt Laurie Wuornos Grody. Laurie Wuornos was born in Troy, Michigan in 1953 to Laurie Jacob Wuornos and Eileen Britta Wuornos, and had one older sister, Diane Wuornos, and one older brother, Barry Arnold Wuornos. By the time she was 4 or 5 years old, Keith and Eileen Pittman would be adopted by her parents and become her step-siblings, who she could play with and grow up alongside with. Eileen said that she had always tried to protect Laurie, striving to be a hero to her, and that she loved her and cared about her a lot. However, Laurie seemed to care a lot less about Eileen, never thanking her for her protection, which included helping her to get away from a swarm of bees, cleaning up her wounds when she needed help, and getting the boys in the pits to leave her alone. When Laurie was 11 and Eileen was 9, they went to play in an abandoned duck shed where they found flammable liquid. Soon enough, the whole shed was up in flames, with Laurie receiving a slight burn on her thigh and Eileen suffering from first, second, and third degree burns, especially on her face, which she went to the hospital to receive treatment for. She later said that her hair hardly grew after this incident, which is why she was always brushing it, taking care of it as best she could, and styling it away from her face. Laurie also did not hesitate to testify in court at Eileen's trial, where she had a similar narrative to her brother Barry, saying that she did not ever witness any abuse of Eileen when they were growing up. She also said that their father had spanked them all when they were younger if they broke the rules, and that punishment later evolved to being grounded. When she became aware of some of the sexual assaults that Eileen had experienced when she was living on the street, she said that she had considered having her committed to a hospital because of her reckless behavior, but did not act on that thought. Once Eileen was in Volusia County Branch Jail after being arrested for murder, she called Lori, who said to her, excerpt from Dear Dawn, Eileen Wuornos in her own words, "When you get the chair, I wish I could pull the switch." Eileen said that it shocked her and that she snapped and became psychologically distorted from it. Lori was likely also very upset in learning that Eileen had used her name as an alias while she was committing her crimes, which was Lori Grody, after she had been married. Much like her brother, Barry, Lori chose to live a life of anonymity after Eileen's case became a media frenzy. She graduated from Troy High School in 1971, got married, had two boys, and later got divorced. At the time of writing, 2021, she is still alive and living in Mansalona, Michigan, age 67. Son, Keith Arnold Wuornos. When Eileen got pregnant at the age of 14, she hid it from everyone for 6 months. When her dad, grandfather, found out, he was furious. This would be the second time he had to deal with a teenage pregnancy, and this time, he was not going to pay the price. According to her best friend, Dawn Botkins, Eileen got pregnant from a known pedophile in the community who went by the name Chief and Potluck, who was also an acquaintance of her grandfather. She used to go and hang out at his house because it was the only place where she could listen to her favorite music. She said that Eileen loved music so much that at some point she dreamed of becoming a rock star. On death row, Eileen wrote, "I'd hitchhike home from Clawson after sneaking out to a party at some 8 miles away, and this one would get me pregnant at 14, low-life scumball." Eileen's grandmother sent her to a home for unwed mothers in Detroit, where she gave birth to a 7-pound, 3.2-kilogram baby boy on March 23, 1971, and named him Keith Arnold Wuornos, after her brother, even though she was not allowed to hold him, and he was immediately given up for adoption. It was a closed adoption, which means that there is no way to know where he ended up. Somewhere out there, Eileen's only child is living his life, hopefully free from even a fraction of the trauma that his mother experienced. At the time of writing, he would be 50 years old, 2021. As for Chief, he later committed suicide. According to Eileen's friend, Dennis Allen, Chief used to purposely pick open chicken eggs before they were ready to hatch, causing the chicks to die, much like he picked on young boys and girls for his own satisfaction. He will not be missed. At her trial, Trisha Jenkins asked Eileen if she had any children. She said, "Yes, I have one son." She used present tense, which reflects her maternal bond to her son, even though she was never even able to hold him. In cases where people have been guilty of harming their own children, past tense or distancing language is a way that interrogators know that they have distanced themselves from their crime to better cope with being questioned under pressure. For example, in the disappearance of Gannon Stauch, his stepmother referred to him in the past tense throughout her media appearance, even though it had not yet been confirmed that he was deceased. And in the Chris Watts case, he referred to his daughters as "those girls" or "those children" throughout his interrogation, completely distancing himself from them and what he had done to them while trying to appear sentimental. To think that Eileen was still using present tense to refer to a son that she had only known for a few seconds is quite sweet, and again shows us a softer side of her. When asked how old she had been then, she said, "He should be around 21 now," which shows that her mind had not only kept track of his age over the years, but that she had also answered the question with him wholeheartedly on her mind, missing the actual question until it was asked again. One has to wonder if her life would have turned out differently if she had been allowed to keep her son, based on the natural maternal instincts we see when she spoke about him.